Product marketing is a revenue generating function. This is my new mantra now, because if product marketing is doing it right, the launches are landing cleanly, sales knows what to say, customers are getting the messaging right away, and all of that just translates into revenue. I think more and more we need to embrace this. It's happening, but I don't know if it's happening at scale. So I'm out here proclaiming this now for us.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm Sid Caton. I'm your host. And I'm also a senior product marketer at Lumapps. So today I'm happy to be joined by Amrita Honurkar. She's a go-to-market lead at Amazon EMEA. Amrita, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, and great job rolling my R's.
You would hope. I mean, practiced. I practiced before this, during, all of that. Amrita, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? What do you like to do for fun?
Sure. So as you know, my name is Amrita. I have 14 years of, sounds like so long, 14 years of product marketing experience for companies like Amazon, SumUp, and Samsung. I've also had the great fortune to live and work across the world. So I've lived in India, I've lived in the United States. So you're in Chicago, I was a Phoenix, it's back there. South Korea, and now I live and work in Europe. I'm also a coach for product marketers, helping them influence without authority. And this year, I am also a Product Marketing Alliance ambassador. So I would say that's probably most of what I do for fun, because I've learned so much from the product marketing community, and this is my opportunity and my way to give back. And it's been something that truly lights me up.
I love it. Okay, that's awesome. So before we get into it, what is a non-marketing skill or habit that has made you better at what you do in all the different facets of your life?
Yeah, kind of feel like I should say AI because of all the stuff that's happening around it. But I'm going to go with something async. So I took up pottery recently because I've just been having a few years where I've been going at breakneck speed and burning out a couple of times. And one of the things I learned through pottery is that you just can't rush things, right? If you've ever done any pottery, like if you push too hard or you push too fast, the whole thing just caves in and you're just left with a lump of clay and you have to work your way up again. And I think this is such a great analogy for product marketing, because myself or the PMMs that I coach, we're all these like ambitious high achievers, right? And a lot of them are coming to me saying, I'm not delivering enough value. Things aren't moving fast enough. And if I dig deeper, it's like we're pushing on the wrong things. So you're trying to deliver value, but you don't have the buy-in, or you're trying to move things when you're lacking the right relationships. And so you're pushing so hard, and of course things are going to collapse at that point, right? So this is what pottery has unlocked for me, just like a new level of patience and a new level of understanding and appreciation for product marketing.
I like that. Yeah, like with pottery and other things, we kind of accept and we understand the laws of physics. You know, it takes time to do these things, whereas sometimes we try to defy them on the job. So
100%. I like that. And yeah, thank you.
It's a fun analogy. I haven't heard that one before. Cool. Well, Amrita, like, how did you, I always say everyone has like a stumbled in to product marketing moment. What was yours? How did you discover PMM?
I think I was always a product marketer because I started my career as a copywriter. And so much of copywriting is you just have to get into your customer's head and write how they think and feel, right? And I just probably didn't know that it was called product marketing, but I was doing it. I think my kind of official product marketing career, if you will, started after my MBA. So I was at Chicago Booth and got hired straight out of school to go work at Samsung. And I transitioned into their product marketing team. And that's sort of where I really learned how a big tech company does global go-to-market at scale, builds like a multi-million dollar launch across multiple markets, just the level of structure and coordination and the deeply intentional way the launches were run was something that really shaped my product marketing fundamentals to a large extent.
Very cool. So what was your role going into Samsung?
I joined in their consulting arm. It's called Global Strategy Group. So it's corporate strategy. But because I had a marketing background, I kind of was doing a lot of marketing specific projects. And then through one of those projects, the CMO at Samsung Mobile was I worked on one of those projects, and then I was able to, she was able to pull me into one of her teams through that.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool. So that's where you started. What happened next, and how did you get to where you are now?
What happened next? So I spent 5 years in Korea. I was in Korea during COVID, very intense time. And I don't know if you remember, it's been like 6 years now, which is crazy to me. But back then, Korea was adopting a very strict stance on COVID, right? They weren't allowing a lot of movement into or outside the country. And I just realized that I didn't want to continue being in a place where my freedom was being restricted to that extent. And one of the things was that my family, my father also was not well during that time. So I had like a real critical reason where I needed to sometimes just get up and leave and go to India, where he was based at that time. And so long story short, I started looking at other options. And I found this amazing role in Germany, where I was recruited to do product marketing, came there, and then have been doing work for different startups and scale-ups, and eventually landed at Amazon here in Europe.
Very cool. So yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about what you're doing at Amazon?
Sure. So I'm at Amazon, and I'm doing go-to-market lead for Alexa and Echo devices that are enabled by Alexa. And so given everything, you know, that's happening in AI, it's really great to be at the center of something that's so fundamental, so important, and transformative to our lives today. And one of the things that is really fun and exciting right now is the voice AI and smart home intersection, right? So there's a lot of course, signal versus noise. But the one thing that we can all agree on when it comes to voice AI is that it has really elevated the bar in terms of what a conversational AI agent sounds like and what it delivers. And I think the smart home is just the live proving ground for that. You're seeing some real use cases come through. And I get to work on that every day. And it surprises me and delights me all day long.
Yeah, wow. It's a lot of like users to serve, a lot of huge impact to be made. Yeah, like you've worked in all these different environments now. Like what is the through line? Like what have these experiences taught you?
Yeah. I think for me, like, you know, when I was at Samsung, it was the GTM was deeply structured. It was just like so methodical in terms of the process. And then I went to work at some startups and scale-ups, and it was the complete opposite, right? Very little process. Product was evolving, GTM was evolving along with it. Like it was, like we used to joke, we're figuring things out. Like we're building the plane as we're flying it. And it was a really fun time. But for me, what that helped me see was across that spectrum, whether there's process or no process, that is never really the problem. When you really dig deeper into it, the PMM's success is dependent on the amount of influence, the trust, and relationship that you've built along the way. So it's different environments, but it's the same currency.
Interesting. So like process isn't the problem. It's like having the context based on the trust you gain with the relationships you make. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think just taking the time to understand what is happening on the other side of the table and figuring out from there, you know, how do we then collaborate, co-create together is so much of the work that happens behind the scenes. I mean, process is a great thing. It's just, you know, ideally, if there's good process, it's reducing friction, not creating more of it.
Yeah. Okay. So as a PMM, like how do you create the environment to close that gap, make those relationships? Of course, the world is now more global, more remote. Yeah. What's your advice for doing that?
So I think, you know, when I talk about closing the friction within process, it's for me usually just coming down to a lot of relationships. And let me give you a concrete example of how, you know, I have tackled that. So at Amazon, we were launching these features, and because the product context was constantly evolving, the content also was evolving. And so then the content and localization team, right, they were also like scrambling, trying to pull everything together. But it was starting to become a bottleneck in terms of our launch timeline. Now, nothing had gone wrong in terms of process, right? We were filing the right tickets, the SLAs were being followed, but at the same time, nothing was moving. Now, we were able to solve it for that launch, but I knew that we had other features coming up, and I didn't want to have the same process happen, same problem happen again. So I had two options. Option one was I could write a 6-page doc, which is very Amazon, right? I could write a doc about, hey, we need to be more agile, and here's how we need to revise our processes for a product and features launch where the context is evolving. And that would probably take 3 months to get approved. But was it going to actually help me solve my problem for my next feature launch? No. Like, you know, so option two for me was, let me go fix the relationship gap, right? Let me go fix the lack of trust that is there behind this SLA. And so I went and had the conversation with the content and localization team. By the way, I found out that they sit across the floor from me in the same building. It was so insane. I was like, here we are just filing tickets and all of this. And we're like, I find out you're like, you know, 100 feet away from me. What? So I went over, grabbed a cup of coffee, had a real conversation. Like, here's what the reality of the situation is. How can we work faster? What are some of the inefficiencies and how can we solve for that? And they also surfaced some constraints that they had, which I was then able to surface into my weekly with my skip and his skip, right? We had this weekly status meeting and that helped us get more resources and more support. So that one conversation gave me so much momentum rather than weeks of back and forth. So that's how I would say you would want to put it into practice.
That's really interesting. Reminds me of like my first job of college. I was like reporting to a chief strategy officer. He's like a very old school guy. Like, you know, it was around in like the 70s and an ad agency, like shooting Marlboro Cowboys. And he's like, before you ever send an email or decide to do anything, the preferred way of communication is go find the person and knock on their door. If not, give them a call. And like last resort is get their email. So like, I love that, you know, you're able to find the person on the other side of the floor and like the context, the data that comes with actually getting to talk to them and understand them. Yeah, you can solve a lot more problems that way. So I really like that. And
I was going to say, yeah, 100%. It's, you know, my experiences in most cases, people are not trying to be difficult. They're just trying to get through their day. And so if you can understand that, okay, there's probably just two teams that are operating in parallel who just never had a conversation before, and you can be that person that picks up the phone and helps kind of open that communication bridge, you're already solving so much of your problems. And I will say from my personal experience, reducing so much of your frustration and anxiety as well.
I bet. I'm curious, like in a larger org, that must be hard to do, right? Even to find the people and coordinate them. Like, do you have any tips on how you do that?
So I think it's really start with the relationships that you have closest to you and then leverage those into identifying who are the right stakeholder. So at Amazon also, one of the things is that we do have a phone tool. And so we can go into that, you know, directory and kind of see all the people and reach out and find out, okay, like, can I, you know, book some time with you and things like that. As an organization, we're very open towards doing that. So that also helps in a lot of ways. And so for me, I always would say, the way at least I have operated is I start with my immediate set of stakeholders. And then from there, I build on additional stakeholders. And sometimes it's just a 15-minute chat. Like, hey, you know, I see that you're working on this. I'm working on this. Can we chat about it for 15, 20 minutes and go from there?
I love it. Okay, so that's like the larger organization side. You mentioned you've also had time at startups and like operating in those environments. How do you manage that? Because of course, process becomes a more of a loaded word. You know, it's like, how do, you know, we have to move fast. How do you, you know, find the right balance and the right level of process to implement in those kind of environments?
I think it comes down to a couple of things. Which is, first, you want to read the room, right? So I was talking about me joining the startup. I was joining this company where marketing was at the receiving end of product launches. So product would finish building and then they would say, here you go, go launch this. And then they would, there was always this tension of, you know, product is ready, we need to ship. And, you know, it's all just the chaos that comes associated with that. Now, I had come from this very, very structured, intentional GTM experience. So I was like, okay, I know what needs to be changed. But you have to start understand where you're starting from. And the starting point in this organization, at least, was that there was very little process. So if I came in with my like 12-step, here's the perfect launch framework, it's just too much like for the organization to absorb. They would just be overwhelmed. And when you're overwhelmed, you're more likely to be dismissed, right? So when there's confusion, it just creates more opportunity to say no. So I just sat on it. I went and had conversations, built relationships, took the time to understand what is product trying to work on this quarter? What is the marketing and sales dependencies in terms of our product launches? What do we need to build out? And then once I had a clear understanding and had built some of that equity and relationship, that's when I started introducing structure. And I didn't just copy paste it. What I did also there was to think about how we can adapt it. So for example, the general kind of understanding is product marketing should be involved with product and should be lockstep with them, which is 100% true, except that in this organization's context, if we were there from day one of the product cycle, product marketing wasn't necessarily adding a lot of value there. And PMM was also seeing them as overhead. What I identified was that the beta, right before that we are going to launch the product out, the beta is probably the highest leverage point for product marketing to come in, because that's when we were getting customer feedback. That's when we could start solidifying and testing our positioning, things like that. And so that was where we could add the most value. And that's where I said, okay, let's adapt the process. Then that's how we enter and then work lockstep with the teams. And then the last thing I will talk about is education, right? It's an incredible tool. So one of the things I did was run a workshop with the product team, showing them, here's the product timeline, here's the product marketing timeline, and here's the different dependencies of product marketing that product marketing has in terms of driving a launch, right? We need to pull together messaging and positioning, and sales needs all of these assets. If we're going to have an event or a media plan, there's all of this lead time that comes associated with that. And once I was able to visualize that, I was able to walk them through it. The thing that really helped land with them was that if you loop in PMM late, you're compromising the quality and the success of the launch. Right. And once you can see that visually, what happens also is they understand, oh, telling PMM that you telling us that, oh, we'll involve PMM when it's ready, when the product is ready, that is not saving time. That's actually losing it. That helped build that bridge and clarity for the organization. And what I would say is probably a playbook for companies and for product marketers who are trying to build more structure and bring more process to their launches.
I love that. I actually did a session at a PMA summit about this. Like, I feel like we ignore this, but the early access, the beta phase is a critical time for PMMs to be involved. And it changes the whole dynamic of how effective we can be in our jobs, and also how we, you know, team up with a product. So yeah, I'm curious, by implementing this process, like, what was the impact on the relationship from a PM to PMM standpoint?
So one was, of course, that we started becoming more of thought partners for them. We weren't just, you know, at the receiving end of a conveyor belt. But the other piece also was that we could start being there with product and thinking about who are we building this for and why and how is that message landing for our customers? Is it landing? If it's not, then what do we need to adjust? And a lot of those things that we would actually wait till the product launched to fix and, you know, wait for market feedback at that point, we were actually able to resolve during the beta itself.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. Like having that process built, you're able to visualizing it, making sure everyone's aligned. There's just so much more opportunity there. So I love that. Okay. I think we covered a lot, actually. I think it's an important topic to discuss in terms of how do you incorporate process the right way without it being something that everyone, you know, has to suffer from instead of like actually enjoy, and how a lot of it is actually has to do with fixing relationships in context. Did I get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one other thing that we probably haven't talked about is probably the fact that, you know, I talked about education. One of the things to also do is to clarify that a product launch versus a product marketing launch are probably two different things. And that also can be a great opportunity for product marketing to show what is the value that they are bringing to the table and why.
Yeah. Just to be, I mean, you kind of explained this, but I'll just be even more direct. Like, can you share what the exact differences are with the product launch and the product marketing launch?
Sure. So, I mean, the way I have experienced it. So different places might define this differently, but usually product is thinking about ready to ship as their product launch. And that's an engineering milestone versus a product marketing launch. I would say is something that's ready to announce. Is the market story out there ready to go for product marketing? And that requires a lot more work, right? And I get it. Like, product teams want to move fast. But if the product is technically done, that still means that product marketing has to finalize the messaging, they have to test the positioning, get real human feedback, they have to brief the sales, they have to build the demos. So that takes time. There's real time, long poles involved, right? So if product says, no, let's go ahead and announce it, and you announce it before that market story is ready, well, guess what? Sales doesn't know what to say. Customers are confused. And all of that means you're just not going to have a successful launch. You're not going to have revenue. So really take the time to show that there's a difference and distinction in these two different points and what's needed in between from product or product marketing to deliver on that.
I like the branding of it too, because like you said, it's like the visual format is really important, but also like these are two different types of launches, you know, like they both happen, but they're different.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. All right. Well, yeah, I think we covered a lot. I like to ask all of our guests two final questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Product marketing is a revenue generating function. This is my new mantra now, because if product marketing is doing it right, the launches are landing cleanly, sales knows what to say, customers are getting the messaging right away, and all of that just translates into revenue. I think more and more we need to embrace this. It's happening, but I don't know if it's happening at scale. So I'm out here proclaiming this now for us.
I love it. That fits right in line. I had interviewed Jess Ruby. When was this? A month ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And she has an amazing talk track of how to quantify this. So just to plug, like, if you get a chance to listen to it, but also for the audience, I think it's huge and super important that we back into the numbers and really start to see the impact we make. So I like that answer. Haven't seen that one before, so I really like it.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, last question is, Mirtha, how can people learn more about what you're up to? Of course, there's a lot of different things. You mentioned your PMA ambassador as well. But yeah, how can we find out all the wonderful things you're doing?
Absolutely. So come find me on LinkedIn. I hang out over there a lot. I'll also be at a couple of Product Marketing Alliance events this year. So I'll be in Amsterdam and in London in the summer. So come and say hi if you're in those cities. I'd love to meet you in person. And if you're curious about coaching, you can come, you can DM me, or you can even check out your own influence skills at tinyurl.com/influence audit.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Amrutha. Excited to stay in touch and appreciate all your insights.
Same here. Always fun talking to you, Sid.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.